Last Thursday, May 20th, the pines outside of the Mohawk territory of Ganasetake, where community members and allies have been maintaining a presence for the past couple of months, were host to a solidarity rally attended by Indigenous people and non-Indigenous allies from across Quebec and Ontario. Community members there have been standing guard against a possible multi-force police invasion, combined of SQ, RCMP, and Ganasetake police, one which has been a constant threat since Chief James Gabriel and his mercenary police force were chased out of the community this past January. Determined to protect the sovereignty and self-governance of their territory, community members have stationed themselves at the east and west checkpoints of Highway 344, the main access road through Ganasetake. During the rally held on May 20th, community members and their supporters spoke passionately about the struggle to defend the territory against the imposition of outside governance, including the state's puppet leaders, to counter the racist media spin on the criminalization of their people, and to stand up for a community's right to dignity and sovereignty. We will now hear a couple of those speeches, the first given by Sean Brandt, an Indigenous organizer who works with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty and lives in Tayandinega.
The community gathered itself, and maybe because it knew the consequences of what would happen if these people were let in. But down on the west end, the community gathered itself, their forces gathered themselves, and the community took the initiative to go after them, attack them, and disperse their forces so that they never had a chance to fully be able to organize and come in and invade this community. It was the first time that I actually realized and saw a community, an organization that stood up and took the advantage on the attack, knowing that we were going to be attacked, and won the battle. Over 12 hours on Monday, we fought them, and we seized a police car, we seized police equipment, and sadly, but necessarily, we put a few of them in the hospital. And that's not anything that we take pride in, but it's the realization that this isn't just some piss-ass little protest that's going on the side of the road. This is about a community that's standing up and fighting for its lives, fighting for its sovereignty, and fighting for its integrity. And in that shed there where sometimes we huddle, those of us that are there at nights and stuff, on the wall there's a poster. And most people carry wallet-sized pictures of their kids, but I carry a poster. On this poster it says, "I am proud because my people before me stood up against the overwhelming odds so that I might have a chance to exist. They were successful as I am living proof. I pray to the Creator that the future generations will feel the same about us, because we will stand up, we will be successful, and they will be the living proof." That was given to us by a brother, Leonard Peltier, who's doing time for his involvement in AIM and shooting that took place in the 70s in Pine Ridge. And when you're down, you go into that shed and you look at the picture of four little kids on the wall and you see that quote and you realize that what we're standing for now is overwhelming. It's the Canadian government, the province of Quebec, it's Jimmy, it's his goons, and the odds seem overwhelming, but we've proven that they're not. We've shown them that the hearts and the integrity of the people in Ganasetake is so much a part of our lives that they can't even enter into this community. They would have to come to every house and go door to door and boot them in and kill half the people of Ganasetake before they could ever get a foothold in here. And they saw that on that Monday, because that Monday was a referendum on the governance, it was a referendum on the policing, and the majority of the community came out and stood those lines. That was the referendum, that's what the cops saw, and they knew that it wasn't a handful of protesters. They knew this was a community initiative, and it had to be respected. We will never, ever show them our backs. We'll take our beatings, we'll take our shootings, and we'll take it face on, and we'll take it looking at us. Not by turning our backs and running and hiding for another day or allowing another generation to take up the responsibility that was ours. And that, to me, has been something that I've been standing for. and proud and honored to be in this community and stand shoulder to shoulder, Mohawk with Mohawk. Sister and brothers, call me an outsider, Jimmy does. Any blood that gets shed in Gunasadage is the blood of my family. And it's the same blood here as in Tyendinaga, as in Grand River, as in Akwesasne Gunawage. It's all our blood, it's all our family. And we make a commitment to stand, and we'll stand to the end. This gathering was about bringing solidarity. They've been running so much shit in the mainstream media. They've been saying that there's been drug labs, cocaine labs, that we're here somehow standing in defense of that. And the only way to get the truth out to people was to actually bring the people here and allow people from Gunasadage to actually speak to those issues themselves. And the message that we're sending out to the government and to the cops is that it's not Gunasadage by itself. It's not the Mohawk Nation by itself. It's people that hold very simple, basic values of human dignity and respect, of housing, of food for our babies. These are the people that share the same values as us. They come 6 or 7 hours to say to the people of Gunasadage, we'll stand with you. And this is demonstration, a small demonstration of the solidarity that exists and the strength that the people of Gunasadage have.
Today's been 51 days since we've been protecting our community. 51 days our men, our women have been standing day and night to stop those goons from invading our territory, to stop those goons from trying to push Canada's agenda. Canada is behind this. Paul Martin, pressure has to be put on the Prime Minister of Canada because they allowed this. They allowed the money to be paid to these goons. They allowed Quebec. They are accountable. Since 1990, our lands have not been dealt with. Instead, Canada has put us under a police state with corrupt officers that think they are above the law. But Canada is not above the law. Paul Martin is not above the law. Paul Martin was the finance minister when these monies were released back in 1997, when they hired a known criminal, dressed him up in a Mohawk police uniform to go into a military base. Paul Martin was the finance minister. Jean Chrétien's appointee, Eric Meldoff, is the chief federal negotiator who is accountable for the $38 million that has been spent without 1 ounce of land being returned to the Mohawk people. I ask the people here today, put pressure on those federal ministers, those people in power that are dictating what is going to be decided and not allowing our people to have a voice here.
The recent conflict on this nearby Mohawk territory caught the attention of the wider public as recently as 3 months ago, when in January, the house of Grand Chief James Gabriel was torched and an outside police force was forcibly contained in the Gunasadage police station for over 24 hours. The community was responding to a secret deal with the federal government signed by James Gabriel to bring in an outside police force. A police force the community considered invasive and illegitimate, and one which was being instated at a cost of $900,000. In fact, the community's distrust for James Gabriel reaches much further back, culminating in his eventual ousting by the community by way of a non-confidence vote. Reinstated by the Canadian courts, Gabriel has continued to dismiss and overrule the wishes of the community, colluding with federal and provincial government authorities on issues of regional corporate development, the municipalization of the area, and Chrétien's now defunct First Nations Governance Act, the FNGA.
The issue of policing has been the locus of conflict in the latest struggle, and is a particularly meaningful one for this small, economically impoverished community. While mainstream media has continued to spin the story as one of organized crime and a community gripped by lawlessness, community members maintain that their people are being unjustly criminalized as part of a state agenda implemented by its puppet chief James Gabriel and his crew of outside police. It is an agenda that extends back to the territory dispute of 1990 and the Oka standoff over the development of a golf course on sacred land, and is one that is deeply rooted in the maintenance of colonial control over Aboriginal people, their land, and their resources. The community has been ardently challenging the ongoing criminalization of their members by both James Gabriel's police and the mainstream media, and the targeting of local people for the manufacturing and sale of native cigarettes. The people maintain their right to collectively decide to sell locally made goods and regard it as essential to the well-being of a community where opportunities for employment and economic well-being have proven elusive.
While Quebec Public Security Minister Jacques Chagnon has recently rejected James Gabriel's request for an additional $1.5 million to police Kanisatagi, a tiny community populated by just over 1,000 people, local chiefs estimate that Quebec is spending approximately $170,000 a day for 58 officers to police the area. There are also signs that the federal government has an interest in seeing things escalate rather than consenting to the wishes of the community. Community members, therefore, as well as members of the Mohawk Nation from outlying areas and non-Indigenous people from Quebec and Ontario and beyond, have been maintaining a presence in the Pines, outside of Kanisatagi, determined to stand against possible RCMP and government troops, who nearby Mohawk communities have been told to brace for by July. To explain in more detail about the struggle, we will now hear from a number of community members in interviews conducted over the past couple of months with CKUT Radio.
What brought us here to capsulate is the government's continual onslaught of interference, internal interference of a sovereign nation. The government has established the Department of Indian Affairs, which only has a fiduciary responsibility based upon the treaties that the government's made us take part of, thereby making them part of the white law, the treaties. The treaties and the fiduciary responsibility are a result from the lands that the governments took from the native people. And the monies that they get from the extraction of minerals and resources and such, the percentage of those monies come to the native people, not from taxpayers' dollars, but they come from lands that were taken from us. Now, the Department of Indian Affairs' responsibility is to ensure that the native people receive their portions of these monies. What they did was they created the department and its structure, where the money has to be filtered down, and it'll pay for the minister's daughter's ballerina dances and braces and therapy and whatever. And whatever's left after it's sifted down that structure, the pittance ends up on the territory. But that's not enough. Now they want the land. What little land was left, they want the land. Never mind, we're not even talking land claims. So their interference largely relies, the success of it relies on their ability to find an empty-headed imposter, such as James Gabriel, who, as they pull the strings and manipulate, will do their bidding in the guise as being considered a chief, which really he's not a chief. the council that was developed here, all they are is administrators for that funding. Now, this government, since 90 and before, have made attempts with various administrators or chiefs to get our land from us. Different ways. 90 is well documented. Now, since James was put into power, he didn't really waste any time. And everything he does is secret from the community, which goes against everything that an Aboriginal society is based upon, which is consensus and democracy. James and the government, or his handlers as we call them, formulated a plan. Now, they've consistently broken their own agreements with us, but there's no reprimand. There's no fallout. It's okay. But on our side, if we dare to question, they turn things on us, like with the media, the manipulation of the media, their PR firms. The side of the native people here is not heard, or it's twisted to accommodate what they want the people to think is actually being done here. The S24 agreement, where James wants us to harmonize with the very municipality that called the police and the army in to kill us. They had body bags stacked. They had 40 ambulances waiting on the outside to bring our bodies out. That was okay. That was a massacre. That was okay. Then they got James in there. James came cheap. He didn't ask too much because he wasn't sacrificing anything. They had the S24, which would strip us of our nationality, and we would become white. We would become citizens of Canada. Our lands. James had the power, as well as the government, to take our lands. If he felt he needed my property to put up toilets, he could do it. James is very efficient. He's been trained well. He was very raw when he got in the office and naive. But when you look at him now, they even taught him how to dress. He dresses like them. He knows the lingo. He's been coached very well. He's continually been found out. Several agreements and things that he's been doing with the government has been found out. And each and every time this community has tried to intervene, has tried to talk to James. First of all, we don't even get an audience with James. Last time I heard the community members attempted to talk to James, he called them, "You fucks." That's how he talks to his people. Well, we're not his people because he's half British. The guy's a sociopath. He's focused. He's got a means to his end, and he sees nothing else. He doesn't care who he steps on, who he hurts. He has no feelings for this community. He has no feelings or care for our future. His future has been cemented with the government. Now, whatever that payoff is, I don't know. But it has to be pretty good if this man is willing, in front of people he's grown up with, to treat us like we're dirt, we're dogs. Like I said, he's got a PR firm and handlers. All the monies that James is spending is coming from our community, which is in receivership, and it's just being piled onto our debt. And this is all at the hands of the government. Now, the internal interference of the government here, if you're looking at a source or the root cause of problems on Native communities, is the government. They get involved in us internally and make it look like we are dysfunctional, make it look like we are the violent ones. But we're not. We're reacting to a situation that's been created in a community. But the government wants to talk about organized crime. They are the ultimate epitome of organized crime because they create and break laws, their own laws. And who are you going to go to for recourse? The government is the ultimate. All right? They even control the police. They break their laws. They lie. They do all. So James is very, very comfortable. He's been nestled amongst the organized crime itself. He's covered. He has every resource given to him to achieve their goal in this Native community anyway. And they're starting with us because we're small. So The people here have had enough. We've had years and years and years and years of this. But now the atrocity of this man who's going to pull away my identity, the identity of my children, my grandchildren. No individual, no human being has that right to tell me who I am or what I'm going to be. Nobody has that right. But the government cannot afford the legitimacy of Native people, Five Nation people, Unkwahunwas. They cannot afford it anymore because we're getting strong. We're getting strong. Our people are educated. We have a government. We are a nation. We are a society. You know, they have too much to lose. They just have too much to lose because when the truth comes out, the theft, the lies, the backstab, all debauchery, the murders they've committed to with Native people, smallpox, all this, residential schools, everything they've tried, and we've survived. They're like cockroaches. The government is like a cockroach. It refuses to evolve, but will probably outlive us all. Okay? Now, the people here have been bad-jacketed. The techniques from CSIS, bad-jacketing. You pound it in the press, criminal element, organized crime, drug dealers, this and this and this, and it's sensitizing. The society on the outside, as well as the people in this community and other communities, that, oh my God, what's going on in my community? You know, it's like, what, do we ride around in choppers? I'm associated with the bikers, or I'm a drug addict. Our society versus the white society, crime, everything, it's all over the place. What makes us unique? The st-